Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Thank you for joining us today in this, the latest edition of the OIS podcast series. My name is Dave Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the GAS program at the Institute, and it's my great pleasure to be joined today by my colleagues, Mike Forward and Dr. Katya Yatimova, who's senior research fellows at the Institute, and Dr. Jack Sharples, who's a research fellow at the Institute. And we're here to discuss the key messages that came out of the quarterly GAS review, issue 16, Impact of Conflict in Ukraine and the Short-Term Gas Markets, that was published by the Institute in early February 2022. Now, just to timestamp this recording in an ever-changing market, we're recording this podcast on the morning of Monday, the 31st of January, 2022. Katya, Mike and Jack, welcome back to the OIS podcast series. Now, Jack, can I perhaps come to you first, if I may? And I'd like to start with a very general question, if I may. You know, what is the importance of Russia in Europe's gas supplies?
Well, Europe, if we take Europe being the UK plus the EU27, is very heavily dependent on imports to meet its gas demand. We import about 85% of all of the gas that we consume, and we import it from a variety of suppliers: Russia, Norway, Algeria, Azerbaijan, a little bit from Libya, and then LNG. If you look at Russia specifically, in 2021, Russian pipeline supplies accounted for about 31% of all of the gas that we consumed. And then if you add on to that Russian LNG supplies, that added about another 4%. So Russia is responsible for about 35% of all of the gas that we consume in a given year.
Okay, Jackson. Therefore, can you now tell our listeners, you know, how does that gas get from Russia to Europe? You know, what are the routes for the Russian pipeline gas into our region?
So to Northwest Europe, Russia delivers gas through the Nord Stream pipeline directly from Russia to Germany. That's about 55 billion cubic meters per year. They also deliver gas to Northwest Europe via Belarus through the Yamal Europe pipeline, which crosses from Belarus via Poland into Germany. And that provides around 35 billion cubic meters per year. And there's a little supplementary connection between Belarus and Poland that adds another 5 BCM to that. Then to Central Europe, much of the gas is provided via Ukraine, around 40 billion cubic meters per year of transit there that takes supplies into Hungary, Slovakia, Austria, and on to Italy. And then to Southeastern Europe, Gazprom delivers gas to European countries via the Turkish Stream pipeline and then via the territory of Turkey. That gas flows into Bulgaria, down into Greece, up into Serbia, and then actually a small amount back up into Central Europe to Hungary. So those are the major routes in the very far north, in the very far south, and then two in what you might call a more central corridor.
And also LNG as well. LNG would come out of Russia as well and into some of the Northwest European terminals?
That's correct. So Gazprom has the monopoly on pipeline gas exports from Russia. But then we also see Russian LNG arriving from a private company, Novatek, and their export terminal on the Yamal Peninsula, which fittingly takes the name Yamal LNG.
Excellent. Well, look, Jack, you know, can I perhaps hit you right at the beginning of the podcast with the million-dollar question, you know? Would Russia actually cut off gas supplies to Europe?
This is actually a question that we have examined at length in our Gas Quarterly, and we have examined a few different reasons why the supplies might be either partially or completely curtailed from Russia to Europe. Now, the first potential reason is the European countries and European Commission placing sanctions on Russian gas exports. But we consider that to be very unlikely. The sanctions that have been discussed at the moment predominantly target Russia's financial sector, and this is really in recognition of European dependency on Russian gas imports. If you look at the flip side, would the Russian government basically force Gazprom to curtail its exports to Europe in breach of its long-term contracts? We again consider this to be rather unlikely. The Russian government depends on tax revenues from its oil and gas sector to fund around a third of its federal budget revenues. Admittedly, oil accounts for around four-fifths of that, but gas still makes up a significant proportion. We think that tax revenues from the gas sector account for about 6% of Russia's federal budget revenues. So it's not insignificant, and it's not really very likely that they would take that step. Finally, there is the possibility that the supplies could be interrupted by damage to physical pipeline infrastructure in Ukraine. But again, the pipelines that bring the Russian gas to Europe via Ukraine are located outside the area that is currently claimed by the separatists in the Donetsk and Luhansk regions of eastern Ukraine. So any damage to pipeline infrastructure would require the conflict to essentially widen beyond its current zone of concentration, let's say. Now, we would consider all of these to be relatively unlikely. However, if the situation between Russia and Ukraine were to deteriorate into an actual invasion, Russian boots on the ground in Ukraine, then I think the uncertainty that the market would feel would be around the fact that any escalation of that dispute, that conflict, would be unpredictable. And so therefore, we would have to say that you can leave anything on the table, really.
Okay, Jack. Well, look, thanks for that. But why don't I now come to you, Mike, if I may? And I think I'm going to ask you perhaps another difficult question. Do you think European buyers may be forced through sanctions, say, to stop buying Russian gas?
Yeah, thank you, David. I think Jack's sort of in part covered this point in terms of the sanctions. It does seem to be highly unlikely that any sanctions, which clearly there would be if there was some sort of invasion on Russia, would actually apply to gas purchases. I mean, Jack's already mentioned there's an enormous amount of European supply comes from Russia on the pipeline routes, ignoring LNG. And would just send the market into complete turmoil and it really hit European economies just when prices are already high. In any case, I think such sanctions would require unanimity in the EU. There's already signs of Germany wanting to go down sort of slightly different route or diplomatic routes than that. So I think it would be, in some respects, a necessary self-inflicted wound. It's like the cartoon character, the guy holding a gun against his head. Yeah, give me your wallet or I'll blow my own brains out. So it just seems a very unlikely scenario to sort of take place.
Okay, so let's stay, can we, on this kind of these sanctions and disruptions. You know, could there be other sanctions imposed, say, on Russia that interfere with the gas market and also as well as the transit countries as well between Russia and Europe? You know, could they curtail Russian gas flows?
I guess in terms of other sanctions, I guess that indirectly, I mean, there's been some talk, certainly in the media, about Russia being limited, its access being limited to the SWIFT international payment system. That could actually cause quite a lot of disruption because if Gazprom can't ultimately get paid for its gas that it's sending along the routes Jack talked about, then why would it carry on sending the gas? So that could lead potentially to curtailment sort of down the road. But again, I think Germany seems very reluctant to support any limitation on Russia's access to the payment system. So again, it also seems unlikely. In terms of transit countries, then obviously the main transit countries, ignoring Turkey for a second, is through Belarus and Ukraine. I think Belarus seems unlikely to do anything independently of approval from Russia, although they kind of threatened that. But I mean, I think Belarus really, I think, is in Putin's pocket, basically, so not likely to do anything independently. Ukraine, I think it's difficult to see the Ukrainian government actually stopping the flows to Europe when Europe's trying to help it, so that would be a bit of a self-inflicted wound for them as well. But I think the real risk is of damage to infrastructure. If that did happen, then in the event of war in Ukraine and fighting in the territory, the prospect of fixing infrastructure would be very limited. So I think that becomes in terms of full-scale invasion, a real potential risk. The infrastructure gets damaged and then the flows would get curtailed. We'll come back to that when we talk about scenarios.
Okie dokie, as you said, we'll address that later on in this podcast. So, Katja, can I come to you then to talk about Nord Stream 2? Do you think the US could impose sanctions in respect of Nord Stream 2? And if so, what could be the trigger? Would it be a full-scale military invasion or any other escalation hostilities short of an invasion? What are your views on that, Katja?
Okay, well, it's no secret that the United States never really liked Nord Stream 2 and never really wanted it to become operational. But the US until now has remained reluctant. I mean, the Biden administration certainly remained reluctant to impose sanctions for fear, well, justified fear, not to alienate Germany, because it needs cooperation of Germany and the EU more widely on a wide range of international dossiers. And it sort of, you know, the United States would have been happy, I think, had sort of sanctioned on Nord Stream 2 been a European decision. But, of course, that never happened because, you know, that wouldn't be in the interest of European gas security. But I think the watershed moment would be if there is a full-scale military invasion. I think it would not be surprising, and I think it's actually highly likely that if there were to be a military invasion, the United States would impose sanctions in respect of Nord Stream 2.
Okay, so will the EU and Germany come on board with US sanctions on Nord Stream 2, and if so, under what conditions? What do you think?
I think politically, it would be extremely difficult, I'd say next to impossible, for Germany and for the EU as a whole not to come on board with the US sanctions in case there is a military invasion. However, in any kind of escalation of hostilities short of military invasion, and certainly in a status quo situation, what we have now, neither Germany nor the EU would take any such measures against Nord Stream 2. So I think the only scenario under which Europe would join the US in sanctions drive is a full military invasion, but not in anything short of that.
Okay, but so if there was a full-scale invasion, could Nord Stream 2 be cancelled altogether? You know, is this the only scenario under which Nord Stream 2 could get cancelled?
I think in that scenario, Nord Stream 2 would not get would not go ahead. It would be certified. It wouldn't become operational for sort of an undefined length of time. And just to stress, we're talking about full scale military invasion, and in my view, that's not the most likely scenario. And you know, if we don't have that scenario, if we have just, you know, status quo or sort of anything short of military invasion, then what could happen? Germany, for example, could attempt to keep suspension on certification, which is currently in place. Certification of Nord Stream 2 operator is suspended. It could try to keep it in place for longer, just sort of under pressure from the EU and from the US. But in my view, is a very limited period of time, maybe a few months, during which suspension could be kept for longer without it becoming obvious that suspension is in place. Not on regulatory grounds, but on political grounds. You know, there's just as much time as the German regulator could continue delaying lifting the suspension, particularly because just a few days ago, the new German subsidiary was established by Nord Stream 2 AG, and that was one of the key conditions by the German regulator necessary for lifting suspension resuming the process of certification. Having said that, and there was also an announcement of Bonetta had very recently that it is unlikely to expect certification before summer. So in my view, certification will restart maybe after some delay, not after too long a delay, under a scenario if we just have, we still have tense Ukrainian security situation, but no further massive escalation to the point of an invasion.
Okay, so based on that, you know, do you think the Nord Stream 2 operator will be certified and start flowing gas in 2022?
I think, in my view, for now, the most likely scenario that it will be certified and start flowing gas by this winter. And for me, the watershed is really if the decision is made on political grounds or decision is made on legal grounds. And I think, as I said earlier in the podcast, if there is a military invasion, the decision is likely to be made on political grounds. And that means really a halt to Nord Stream 2, as we know it. But in any scenario short of military invasion, the decision will be legal / regulatory. And on this, there is a very limited amount of time for how long one could further delay certification. So I think it's more likely than not to go ahead by the end of this year. And of course, one important point to make is if the whole project is cancelled, one shouldn't ignore the question of financial damages, or very significant financial damages that would have to be paid in any such scenario, and one could envisage a lengthy litigation on that front.
Interesting. Well, look, Mike, can I come perhaps back to you now? Because we did briefly talk earlier on about the fact we were going to address some maybe possible scenarios on Russian gas flows to Europe. So I think the question is, you know, could Europe replace any lost supplies from Russia, and what would that look like?
Yeah, it depends a little bit on the magnitude, but I think there are four basic sources for replacing lost imports from Russia. One is, we start with part of the imports from elsewhere, let's say North America, North Africa, Iran, Azerbaijan. Then there's probably very limited scope for increases there. They were already quite high last year with Algeria sending a lot more. Azerbaijan maybe could step it up a little bit. Then you've got the wider European production, including sort of the Norway area. Again, European production has been in decline for a number of years. Groningen may be able to produce a little bit more. It's already said it might do this year. But again, we're not looking at anything more than a minor increase in production there. Then you fall back on more withdrawals from storage. That's a temporary solution anyway, because you're going to have to refill storage. As Jack's talked about, storage is already at very low levels, already withdrawing at significant rates at the moment. If you carry on those rates, it'll be empty by the middle of April. Not that it's likely to, although in the event of curtailed supplies from Russia, could well do. Then you fall back on the global LNG market. There's been quite a bit of talk about the US especially trying to get other LNG suppliers to send more to Europe, those US suppliers from US terminals or Qatar. But there's been quite a big increase in LNG suppliers into Europe in the last couple of months. And LNG export is really always running at sort of maximum capacity at the moment. So yes, more LNG could come to Europe, but it means it's been diverted from elsewhere, which is Asia. So if we look at the scenarios, we're not really judging here as to whether these things are likely to happen, but what would happen? So if we're looking at what might happen if nothing happens, you know, this all goes away, even in that sort of base case, then the market was already looking very tight. So we're already in a pretty bad situation for the rest of the year with currently quite low flows from Russia. So we're already not starting from a great place. In the worst case scenario, when all flows are cut off through from Nord Stream 1, through Yamal, Europe and Ukraine, then you really are looking at extremely high prices. There is not enough replacement gas from elsewhere in the world. Quite a bit more LNG could well flow to Europe, but it means it's flowing away from Asia and other countries. China could be especially sort of badly hit under that sort of scenario. You're then looking about storage basically emptying very, very quickly. But worse than that is you can't then refill it coming into next winter. The next winter's looking particularly dire. That scenario, you lose 100 billion cubic metres, which is about 20% of Europe's total supply in 2022. And you can't replace that. And ultimately, you lead to a lot of demand destruction. So you're looking at power plants not being able to operate, industry not being able to operate, and obviously the high potential in many countries, Eastern Europe, the light's going out, basically. A slightly less worse scenario is that, you know, we talked about damage to infrastructure in Ukraine. That would take out about 35 to 40 BCM. If that wasn't replaced, then it's not quite as bad. You still get diversion of energy imports. Storage is emptied, can refill a little bit. It's not quite as bad, but you still get sort of very high prices. The third scenario was that because of the flows along the Yamal-York route are at virtually zero at the moment, and you could possibly divert the flows that were going through Ukraine, at least in part, along the Yamal-York route. That mitigates to a large extent the damage to infrastructure in Ukraine. So you don't quite get back to the base case, but you know, prices are still higher, but you can just about manage to get through this summer. But again, I said that base case scenario is not great because we have very low Russian flows at the moment, and next winter is looking very bad even with that base case. So yes, none of the scenarios are really, really very good. And even to get back to a more normal market, if there is such a thing, the last 3 or 4 years, we do require Russian flows to increase quite significantly. And that is one of the main problems.
Okay, Michael, can I perhaps stay with you to end the podcast? You know, could you share with our listeners the key conclusions from the quarterly gas review, impact of conflict in Ukraine and the short-term gas markets?
I think fundamentally, we think, you know, what Katja and Jack have said is that any curtailment of flows seems to be very unlikely. The only likely curtailment possibly is if there's damage to infrastructure. And that sort of scenario could be replaced, or flows replaced, by moving the gas on a different route into Europe. That's still not wonderful, as I said, but it's not quite the disaster scenario that people are looking at. Nord Stream 2, Katja's talked about that. I mean, it's fundamentally, as Katja said, it's a political decision as to what happens on that in the event of any sort of invasion or hostilities. I think one thing that's not been talked about so much is that, Gazprom has been saying, well, we're sending exports to Europe based on the nominations coming from our long-term contracts, which is, it looks to be correct. I guess the question we kind of have, therefore, is at the moment it's about 230 million cubic a day flowing along those three main corridors into Europe, and the contract quantities on a daily basis, as we call it, it seems to us to be well over 300 million cubic a day. So I guess one question is, why aren't the European buyers nominating the maximum under these contracts at the moment, which would alleviate significantly the supply situation? I think one possible answer is in the economics. If a lot of the contracts are now priced on a month-ahead basis, January price was $37, whereas the day-ahead price was, you know, in the mid-$20. So it made a lot more sense to buy day-ahead or take out of storage than sort of buy month-ahead. But that's will begin to unwind, so the incentives might change. And I guess for each individual buyer, it doesn't make sense for them individually to buy expensive gas because they might not move the market. But collectively, if all the buyers did it, you'd expect a lot more gas to flow if they nominated, which could have a virtuous effect of actually bringing prices down. So I think there's not been much talked about the ability of them to do that, but it does surprise me a little bit. Some of the governments aren't suggesting gently to them, well, why not nominate up to your maximum amounts? I guess the general conclusion, I mean, the market's already very tight. There's not much scope for additional supply, additional energy imports. And the market will remain tight unless we see additional flows from Russia through the year. And any sort of curtailment is going to just throw the market to turmoil. You know, the market moves plus or minus 10% on a daily basis price just on a rumour about something. So the market is really spooked and highly uncertain. I think we're looking forward to that for the rest of the year, buddy.
Mike, I think you're right. And an uncertain future, volatile prices, and certainly a subject, the whole subject of Ukraine and European gas supply, is a subject that the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies, you know, we're going to continue in our research and publish reports on that. So please, you know, keep an eye on the OIES website for that. Well, look, you know, Katja, Mike and Jack, thank you so much for your time today. As always, you know, I really enjoyed our conversation that builds on the messages from the Institute's recently published quarterly GASH review. Well, I hope you all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.